Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'd like to plug the Chase Thomas podcast. Listen to Chase Thomas. You'll be a smarter sports fan and obviously a much better human being.
Matt Chernoff from 680 The Fan's Chuck and Chernoff Show here. And I want to say thanks for listening to today's episode of the Chase Thomas podcast. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps. Chase Thomas went to Parkview in North Georgia. He's a local Atlanta kid, and he won't let the Luka versus Trey thing go. He interned with us back in the day, and you'll always remember him. Anyway, definitely go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com, where you can find all of Chase's previous episodes, all of his articles, and do him a solid. Leave him a rating and review if you're an Apple Podcast listener. Reminder to listen to our show, Chuck and Chernoff, Monday through Friday, 3 to 7 on 680 The Fan, and subscribe to my podcast as well. Welcome to Matlanta, wherever you get your podcasts.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. Joining me down there in Decatur, Georgia, my good friend from the University of North Georgia alumni, Matt Green, is here. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir. It is good to be back talking college football like we do every week on this podcast. Do we jump right into it? How do I broach this subject here, man? How you feeling?
You're gonna have to be more specific. What are you?
How are you doing personally?
I mean, I wrote about it earlier. I don't know if you read it, but I wrote about how Tennessee fans should feel, and you can go check it out at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. But look, the family group chat was not good last night. It was one person left the group chat. Has not been back. I don't know if they're going to rejoin, but they did leave the group chat. It was a lot. A lot has happened. Hendon Hooker, since that game, has been confirmed to be out for the season, and just brutal way to end his college football career. He's going to get drafted, and hope for the best for him. But man, tearing your ACL the way he did, and it looked bad at the time with the non-contact pitch play, and that ended the game really too. It was a 2-for-1 because he also fumbled when he was going down, and that's when it was over. Because at that point, until that point, I still thought Tennessee was going to win. Like, it was until the fumble where I was like, "Oh, this is just too much. I don't think they're going to be able to come back from this." Which is a testament to Tennessee and Josh Heupel. It's just that, like, I don't know. I just kept waiting because, like, they're not going to go. They scored 5 touchdowns on their first 5 drives. Like, eventually things will settle down. Eventually Tennessee, I mean, South Carolina still has to play perfect football to win this game, because I was like, the offense is coming, because they still see stuff and they were able to run the ball. Jabari Small had some big stuff, and Nooker was able to do some stuff. They still had the short stuff. Squirrel White was doing a lot more than I thought. Cedric Tillman was good when he needed to be. Princeton Fant had a really good game. But pass protection wasn't bad. I was like, all right, well, this will just continue on. It's just going to be a dogfight. I thought it reminded me a lot of Ole Miss Tennessee last year, And I thought it was just going to be a crazy officiated game at the end. Cam Smith talking about Jalin Hyatt after the game, saying like there's not, I think he was asked about trash talk between the two of them or something. And he said he didn't, something to effect, and I'm paraphrasing here, of like, it's not really trash talk, it's only one sided or something. And, you know, he spent a lot of time going after the official. On one moment I texted you, I was like, how is this dude not tossed? I've never seen a college football player just go at the official for that long and by him, like, without a coach pulling him back. Like, what are you doing? You can't just be like on an island yelling at this official for, I think it was one of his pass interference calls at that point in the game. But I don't know. I mean, it's weird because before the year, and this is something I said on the preview show, Matt, is this, that like coming into the year, I said 10-2, and everything's about perspective. And it's so hard. And this is what I wrote about, is when you lose matters so much more than it should. And if this game happens in September and they just get the defense just implodes like this, the secondary looks this bad, you know, like it just, you have that kind of mulligan game early on. People don't remember. Like if you flip LSU and now, or LSU in the South Carolina weekend, because we played South Carolina about the same time we played LSU last year. And if you flip that this year, you're looking at, oh, Tennessee just ruined LSU's CFP chances. They had that one, the two losses to South Carolina and Georgia. Yeah, they can't win the title, but wow, Tennessee coming on strong at the end here. We thought LSU was a CFP team. Maybe Tennessee is. And those wins still happened. Like, Tennessee still went into Death Valley and won big. Tennessee still blew the doors off Kentucky. Tennessee still got over the Pitt hump. They still got over the Florida hump. And they beat Alabama at home. Alabama has lost. They are 4 points away from being undefeated at this point. They lost by 1 point to LSU and 3 to Tennessee. And outside of that, they're undefeated. And there's, I mean, who knows what happens the last couple of weeks. But, I mean, those are all gigantic wins. Like, splitting Georgia, Alabama, a lot of folks around college football laughed at the notion of Tennessee splitting them. Better just even being in either of those games. And I was like, no, they're going to win one. And then I said before the year that this team was going to have a top 10 offense again, scoring offense. They're tied for number one right now, even through 11 weeks. When you have that kind of offense, it's just really hard not to win double-digit games. They were the only Power 5 school not to win double-digit games while also finishing in the top 10 in scoring. They are still on path to finish in the double-digit wins. Like, if it takes a bowl game because of the Vanderbilt with Joe Milton now in on Saturday, we'll see how that goes. But, I mean, I still think this season is a huge win. I also think it was good for Heupel to talk about it the way he did, where Heupel, he said he, like, essentially, again, paraphrasing, is just that in his post-game presser of, like, I hope this sticks with them. I hope this sticks with the coaches, the team. Like, this one needs to sting for a long time. This one needs to stay with the program for a long time, because you can't have losses like this. Like, you can't, if you want to be at that next level, you want to get to the mountaintop, you want to be a CFP team, you want to be an SEC champion, that sort of thing, this can never happen again. Like, this is, under this administration, that kind of just getting worked by a team who did not score an offensive touchdown the week prior. Spencer Rattler played the game of his life, and he deserves a lot of credit because he had a lot of NFL throws in this one. He was great. Like, Spencer Rattler was sensational. He had a big day, and a lot. Like, it, but you put that back on the flip side. Latrell Bumpus was in the post game, and he basically said, like, no, they were doing just about the stuff we were expecting them to do. We just didn't execute. Like, that scares me even more. Is like, it wasn't even really like any of the Tennessee defense was surprised by what, like, the Wildcat stuff. They ran a lot of Wildcat. That didn't catch Tennessee by surprise. It was the big plays, the receivers making big plays that threw me by surprise, threw Tennessee by surprise. Like, Brandon Turnage, I haven't seen the latest on him, but he was getting worked a bunch. They were targeting him over and over and over again, and secondary just didn't have any answers. Like, the run defense held up for the most part, but no pass rush. Byron Young, Tyler Barron, Latrell Bumpus, didn't matter who it was, they weren't getting home, and Spencer Rattler had all the time in the world. And when you give these quarterbacks, especially like super talented quarterbacks, regardless of what they've been to this point, he was still a five-star consensus number one prospect for a reason, and it was for stuff like that. Like, that's what you were expecting at Oklahoma week in, week out, was that kind of game. And he had it in him, and he had it against Tennessee at the worst possible time for Tennessee. But I said coming in, it's like, I didn't feel good about finishing the year with two road SEC games. I didn't feel good about this situation. I predicted before the year that Tennessee would drop a dumb one.
It's South Carolina and Vanderbilt, though, as far as road.
But they're
SEC
still road SEC games, and it's just they have everything to gain, and Tennessee had everything to lose. And it's also, I am personally excited to see how Tennessee responds, right? We have not seen them face this kind of adversity to this point in this administration, because last year they caught everybody by surprise. There's no real adversity. They were just playing with house money, had a schedule. This year they get down to the end, they're competing for a spot in the playoff. And the way it's going, it wouldn't have mattered anyway, which is what I hope for my own sanity, is USC and TCU went out. So Tennessee wouldn't have even gotten in anyway. But how they respond against Vanderbilt and how they respond going into next year is just going to be very interesting, because I mean, this is it. Like Kirby, and you saw it with Georgia when they lost and got upset at home at South Carolina in 2019. This is an embarrassing loss. You're like, oh, where are we going? Where is this offense going? And then they won six straight. They get to the SEC title game. They lose to LSU, but that was the best team in the country. But it's like how you rebound when you have those embarrassing losses. And look, I mean, South Carolina's still under 500 in the conference under Shane Beamer. They're still one of the worst offenses in this conference. They still are South Carolina. They have been the SEC East champions once since joining the conference in 1991. They have not won the conference. They have, the upside's not there. So, I mean, the South Carolina fans who were even going after Tennessee recruits today, being like, are you sure you don't want to consider South Carolina? And then guys like Shandamian Bradley, like, no, I'm good. Ball for life. It was hilarious stuffing these South Carolina fans in trash cans for trying to go after these kids' recruits. Like, are you sure? Which is just a bad look. Stop going after these kids. Leave them out. It's fine. It's good. You had a lot of recruits in the building who watched your Gamecocks upset and blow out Tennessee. Just enjoy that. Twitter was a cesspool. A lot of folks, I had to get off because I was like, I'm going to get super mad. I was already annoyed and frustrated. And then I'm just scrolling through all the different fan bases who were just loving the blowout, loving Tennessee getting stomped. I mean, Tennessee, it doesn't matter if it's baseball, basketball, football, they elicit so much hate and such strong reactions from the nation. They are, I mean, it's wild.
I think it's the fan base. It's the culture. Like, especially the Tennessee baseball team was just shooting birds. Like, they embraced being the enemy, right? And you saw Heupel, you said last week, right? He wants to be the next Spurrier, like throwing 60-yard bombs on Missouri up four touchdowns, five touchdowns.
Second string was in, to make that point.
But, I mean, they're scoring a lot on people. They're kind of –
But
they
also, he was kind of vindicated. Let's make that point. Joe Milton's going to play football on Saturday. So it's good that he got those 70-yard bombs in, that he got real work with this offense in against Mizzou. Like, that matters. That's what you never know. Like, you never know with injuries and how stuff happens. If you're not running a real offense with those second stringers in, like what you actually do, what's the point? What are we supposed to do? Just kneel it over and over again? No. Play the offense. Stop him. No, you can't stop a 70-yard through the air bomb from Joe Milton throwing to his left. No. Then that's on you. That's on you.
That's fair. And I respect how positive you ultimately are being about this, because it is 10-2 preseason. Every Tennessee fan signs up for it. But like you said, when you lose matters, the expectations get recalibrated, and losing the way they did. And it's not even like I was trying to stack this up with honestly some of the worst losses in college football in the last 20 years. Like for Tennessee alone, like the first one that pops out is the SEC championship 2001. I think they're in the national championship if they win. But that's like a top 10 LSU team with Rohan Davey and Nick Saban coach team, obviously. And then probably, what was it, 2016, where they finally broke through and beat Georgia and Florida. And I mean, maybe it's the South Carolina loss that year, or
they also lost to Vanderbilt that year.
They like got blown out by Vanderbilt. So like that's one of the worst Tennessee losses, but I feel like you have to go back to like the West Virginia loss back in 2007 to Pitt, where like they're in the BCS title game if they win that, if they beat a 4-7 Pitt or whatever they were in the season finale. Maybe even the Dan Mullen, the shoe game against LSU. Like, I mean, that basically started the downfall of their entire program, but it was like it wasn't necessarily the automatic college football playoff implication, but it was like, week before SEC championship, it set up this win the SEC championship, you're in the playoff scenario, and you just blow that the week before it even happens. Maybe the Boise State lost to Nevada that one year with Kaepernick when they kicker missed like a 30-yard field goal that would have – there were still two undefeateds. I think it was 2010. There were still multiple undefeateds. I don't think they get in the national championship, but it cost the school like millions of dollars for not getting in like a BCS bowl. So I don't know. I was just trying to think it's – I don't know, the magnitude of it. Like, it is just year two of Heupel, but it's also like the way this team is constructed – like with Hooker going to go to the NFL, like so many seniors kind of on this team. It's not like an obvious, like, okay, this wasn't a year Tennessee expected to be here, but it's not like, next year was the year we were kind of targeting. You know what I mean? It's not like when you look at Georgia, like 2017 or something, like losing to Alabama, like they did. They lost so much off the defense the next year, but there was still like a lot of the young core of that like freshman class that played a lot of meaningful minutes. It feels like this Tennessee team, like this was kind of a veteran team here. And so I wonder, you know, what this does moving forward. Like Joe Milton, there's going to be a lot of hype around Joe Milton going into this Tennessee offense. Like, I'm not going to suggest they're going to lose to Vanderbilt or anything this week, but like obviously Vanderbilt's playing good football, but I think they should be able to get it together enough to just beat Vanderbilt. Who knows, you know, what happens in a bowl game, people sit out, whatever. But I don't know. I'm interested to see where Tennessee goes from here because they don't necessarily look like they're going to be better next year.
It just depends. Like, I think 8-4, 9-3 is probably realistic next year. I don't see a huge drop off because it also goes back to the points thing where I'm like, I don't see the offensive drop off there. And like you said, there are some seniors, like said, it's gone. But something that I would say about Cedric Tillman and Hendon Hooker in this game, and this is something that I felt all year because since he got injured and then kind of came back and kind of wasn't there, like he made a go of it against Georgia, but he wasn't himself. And you could tell just like, Ramel Keaton just really settled in as the third guy with Brew McCoy and Jalen Hyatt. Like, those three really settled in with Cedric Tillman out, and that's when you blow out LSU and you blow out Kentucky, and things were just humming where they got used to it because, like, they don't sub with the receivers. It's a bunch of snaps for their three guys, and Heupel likes to go with his three. And part of me is like, man, I wonder what a lot of this stuff looks like if Ced just doesn't get hurt, or you're just like, all right, Ced, just shut it down for the year because – We have this thing moving, so much of his timing and getting right. Like, Hooker missed Cedric Tillman multiple times in this one deep. There's a bad no pass interference call on Cedric Tillman on one of those bombs down the right side. But Hooker wasn't himself on the deep throws. And that was a huge part of this game is, like, they couldn't get back in. It was Jalen Hyatt was completely taken away deep. Cam Smith deserves credit for shutting him down and forcing him to take only underneath stuff because Hooker only averaged 5 yards an attempt in this one. That's just bonkers based on what South Carolina was to this point. I mean, their starting safety got tossed for targeting. They put in a true freshman behind him, and they just didn't really miss a beat. And it was just kind of demoralizing to see the offense kind of struggle. Brew McCoy was active early, and then he got hurt, and he never came back in. So that was another part of it. Squirrel White was great. So Squirrel is going to be an awesome, awesome, awesome receiver for this group and in this offense. But you know, Darnell Wright, right tackle, he's going to go to the NFL. He'll be gone. Cooper Mays will be back, I think, a lot. I don't think it's going to be as bad of a turnover. Like, the running backs will all be back outside of Small, and you've got Dylan Sampson looks like he's going to be a dude. I'm pretty excited about him. Jalen Wright's continuing to get better. I'm not really worried about the running back room. I'm also just not really worried. I mean, there's wide receiver talent out the wazoo. Like, that's one area. Like, they're fine. And I think Jalen Hyatt will actually be back too. And I think Brew McCoy will have a bigger year. Tight ends scares me. Princeton Fant and Jacob Warren are both gone. So all their production there is gone. So, and they don't really have obvious backups. So I'm going to guess they go in the portal. But I mean, there's a bunch of reinforcements. The main thing is the secondary. Like, there is so much talent coming in this class in the secondary. So I think they'll have to get some in the transfer portal because you can't just go straight freshman. But Jordan Matthews is in this class, Ricky Gibson, Sylvester Smith, Jack Luttrell. You go up and down the list. There's so much. Christian Conyer. It's just the defense needs a lot of depth, but it's also to the point where you lose to Vanderbilt, and I wrote about this, is just that, like, it's one thing to lose to South Carolina. You give up a lot of points. You give up a lot, and you lose to Vanderbilt and South Carolina. It just doesn't matter. Someone has to get fired for that. Like, that's just, it's unfortunate, but not everyone can keep their jobs. That's how you end your season, is losses to South Carolina and Vanderbilt, especially just with how high this program has been this year, getting to number one in the opening CFP and all that. But I don't know. I think, like I said, I'm still optimistic about where this team's going. I'm still optimistic about Heupel being one of the best offensive minds in the sport. I think the recruiting's fine. That's all going to continue to get better and better. Nico's coming in a couple weeks. Like, we'll see if he's the guy. So if it's not Joe Milton, they have Taven Jackson, they have Nico. Like, they're going to be okay. I think the offense will continue to be okay. But, I mean, I think you might have to have real questions and conversations about Tim Banks as DC if he's back. Like, Roddy Gardner, I think, is just untouchable unless Auburn pulls him back in, if Kiffin hires him and he goes back there. But I don't know. I think there are going to be some real questions that have to be asked based on that kind of defensive performance, because that was one of the worst defensive performances I've ever seen. And it was so bad that even with how depleted it was, Jeremy Banks not playing, Brandon Turnage getting hurt, which was brutal, because not only did he get, he was just had a really, really rough night in coverage, but then he gets hurt and you just feel horrible for the kid because he wasn't a factor all year long. And then he works his way, plays his way into a starting spot opposite of Danico Slaughter, and those two just got destroyed tonight. And I don't think any of us saw that coming. And the secondary is just bad. Trey Flowers and Jalen McCullough are veterans, but they've been bad, so you won't really miss them. Linebackers, Beasley was great. Not having Jeremy Banks in this one was a huge blow. He's kind of the quarterback of this defense, and was really the only one who gets consistent pressure over the last couple weeks. And not having him on the edge blitzing was obviously missed in this one, but that's not an excuse for 60 plus points to South Carolina. But a lot of credit to the Gamecocks. They won this game handedly. Tennessee didn't take care of business, and I'm curious to see how Joe Milton does on Saturday against Vanderbilt. We'll see. But a horrible way for it to end for Hooker, just an all-time great Tennessee player, had a great, great time here at Tennessee over 2 years, special player. But yeah, it was really, really rough, and a lot of fan bases really enjoyed how rough it was for all of us. And I don't know when I saw Georgia becoming like Alabama fans after a year of dominance, but it happened quickly. They are now the, you think you're one of us, this is what happens. And it's just, man, you just won your first title, man. Like, you just won it. Can you at least wait for like 5 years? Like, you might go back to back this year. You're the favorites. Can you give it some time? Can you give it a little bit of time?
From a Georgia perspective, it's kind of, I feel like Tennessee fans are getting a little too big for their britches. They were the new kid on the block.
Hold on. I hear this a lot. This is,
take it easy.
They weren't framing it like that, though. It was so dismissive of like, who are you to believe? And it's like, we didn't put ourselves number one in the CFP. They put us number one. What do you want us to do? We won the games in front of us. We are ahead of schedule. We have the best offense in the country. Are we supposed to feel bad? Like, oh, like what do you want us to do as Tennessee fans when things are going as well as they were for the majority of this season? I don't understand what that was and the excitement and believing. And it was hyped as the game of the century. Like, what are they supposed to do?
I think if you talk a lot, you get, you know, you're very brash. I think when you lose, I think people celebrate those teams losing more. I think that's just how it goes in sports in general. But
who on this team do people not like? Like, that was the whole thing.
I don't think it's any of the players. I think it's just the fans. It's just Tennessee as a collective.
But they really elicited a lot of hate. Like, I saw so many. It was like everybody came together for Kumbaya. And I just see this in baseball, football.
I feel like America was rooting against Tennessee, the Tennessee Volunteers.
1,000%.
I feel like South Carolina was doing a service for the country, yeah, to keep Tennessee out of the playoff. They're not there yet. Let them work their way to it a couple years, you know, build a program up. But they're not quite there yet. Georgia had established like a top five program for like a half a decade before we got the benefit of the doubt getting in the playoff without winning the conference, you know. So we just, Tennessee's not quite there yet. But
what are we supposed to do?
No, there's not. It's narratives in it. It's not like real. Twitter's not a real place, right?
So exactly. Who knows, it's like, how I want these people, like, I just come find me at a coffee shop and then just tell me, like, on campus, like, or just on campus, just find me and be like, hey, here is what, how I think Tennessee fans should act for us to, like, I just don't, I think people's minds are already made up. Like, all these people just already have had,
I think every SEC fan base is arrogant. And when you're the talk of the town, you might be the most arrogant. And so that's who people start rooting against. So, you know,
but no, people don't want people, no, hold on. I don't think that's true because I really don't think people want Tennessee to be good. They are indifferent about Ole Miss being good, indifferent about Arkansas being good. I think there are a lot.
But it's like once you actually, if Arkansas is actually legit good, that's when people start to hate him. You don't, you're not doing anything right.
People like Sam Pittman. The narrative's good for them.
You're not doing anything right until you have haters. Like that's just, Arkansas is a cute story, but they're not going to beat my team. So, you know, I'm not threatened by them. Like that's that sort of thing. Like, yeah, Arkansas, I'm rooting for you.
Yeah.
But they come into Athens and beat Georgia. Then you're like, you know, fuck Sam Pittman. What is this guy?
Yeah.
So that's how things can change. Like me and my brother talked about, like, we don't really hate Baker Mayfield. And we're just kind of like, probably because Georgia beat Oklahoma. If Oklahoma beat Georgia, we'd probably still hate Baker Mayfield. But so that's just kind of how it goes. If you're making enemies, you're doing things right. But yeah. In terms of this game, I want Georgia to watch this game, watch South Carolina and how they use Jaheim Bell. He's obviously playing running back out of necessity for South Carolina, but this is what I've said about Brock Bowers for Georgia. Like, this man needs to touch the ball 15 times a game, like a running back. Like, you should feed him. And Jaheim Bell, 17 carries, 82 yards, also had 5 catches and 2 receiving touchdowns. Like, this guy is just a baller. Like, I'm not really sure what position he's going to play. I guess he's still going to be a tight end going to the next level. But I don't know. This guy looks like he can be a legit running back. I was super impressed with South Carolina. It was unbelievable the way South Carolina's offense was just humming along. This is the Green Line stat of the week. I'm just going to jump right into it. It's multi-parts, and I apologize beforehand, but the South Carolina was just unprecedented what they did on Saturday. So, as you know, 63 points, I'm sure you've heard by now, most points ever given up in the AP poll era by a top 5 team to an unranked opponent. South Carolina, 10 drives in this game, scored 9 touchdowns. 54 points in their previous 3 SEC games, 1-2 in those games. Who are those losses to Florida? And I want to say, did they lose to Vanderbilt?
No, they beat Vanderbilt.
I can't remember Mizzou. Their last two. Missouri, that's who it was. Yeah. Lost to Florida and Missouri over those. 54 points in those previous 3 games, scored 63 on Saturday. Spencer Rattler was 8 touchdowns and 9 picks on the year. 5 touchdowns in versus SEC competition coming into Saturday night. And this guy just channeled his inner, Johnny Manziel? I don't know. Steven Garcia, I guess, probably would be more appropriate. Just 30 of 37, 430 yards, 6 touchdowns, no picks. Like you said, like, Is that the 5-star that we were all talked about? We've all heard about, or was this more of an indictment on just Tennessee's defense? Like, this team scored 6 points against Florida, and it wasn't even an offensive touchdown, right? It was like a fake punt, I think, for a touchdown, or fake field goal for a touchdown.
Fake punt.
So I couldn't explain it. Like, we knew this Tennessee defense has been, you know, susceptible at times this year, but they've also kind of come along, like 44-6, I think, against Kentucky, right? Like, you've seen some better defensive performances. I don't know. It was hard to explain what you saw other than, I don't know, is Tennessee looking ahead? They're not looking ahead to Vanderbilt. Like, all they had to do is beat South Carolina and Vanderbilt, and they're in the college football playoff, most likely. Just, like, obviously there's still a scenario, like you said, that they don't get in, but the probability, it was very probable for Tennessee to get in the college football playoff, but I don't know. You start to have to ask questions. Like, is Heupel's philosophy, like, is it ever going to, like, have a good defense? Like, do you need to adjust something if you're going to have the ball for 20, 25 minutes a game and you're going to have your defense on the field for 35, 40 minutes a game? Like, is this always going to be an issue for Tennessee to have an above average defense?
Well, I think the fact that this class in 2023 is so defense focused, I think he knows. You listen to Heupel talk, he knows. Like, Heupel Heupel understands. Like, the man won a title. Do people forget this? Like, he won it at Oklahoma. Like, the man won a title. He knows
as
what
a quarterback.
No, but he understands that what kind of defense you need to win a national championship.
I mean, it's 2000. That's a completely different game, though, right? I mean, that's his style. That's not the style Tennessee's playing.
Yeah, but I'm saying,
was Josh Heupel throwing like 14 touchdown passes that year or something? Like, I'm sure it was pretty. Oklahoma's winning with defense.
What I'm saying is that the man understands that the defense has to be better. He is recruiting in that way. Like, Devin Hobbs, the five-star defensive tackle who Tennessee is in a final dogfight with, pardon the pun, with Devin Hobbs this week. He's leaning. The crystal ball is going Devin Hobbs to Tennessee. Like, they brought in Shadavian Bradley, Joshua Josephs, and Tyke. Like, you look at where he's putting a bunch of resources. The defense is a priority. The defense has to get better. He understands the defense has to get better. Everyone at the university, and I'm sure he just gets calls about it all the time. Like, I can only imagine what folks are like if he goes anywhere. Of like, hey, what are we doing with the secondary? Well, what are we doing? We understand. But it's also a great place to be. And this is what I would encourage Tennessee fans who are feeling down about this. It's just that, like, 10 wins is still very much on the table, double-digit wins, all that kind of stuff. I don't see the offense falling off a cliff ever. Like, I think with the recruiting, with what he is able to do with a player that wasn't even his quarterback in Hendon Hooker, who committed to Jeremy Pruitt and wasn't the day one starter, the culture he has where Joe Milton stayed this whole time and the two have just become close friends. You look at who he's brought in. I think they'll do well in the portal this winter. I think they're going to get a big surprise there with some folks who are like, whoa. NIL is still super strong at Tennessee. Tennessee is one of the best NIL situations, I would say, across the country. That's going to keep them in focus. But it's like, it's the opposite of the Jimbo thing, where it's like Jimbo praised the offense stuff, but there's no offense. Like, they were lifeless. Like, this is a train wreck. It could be way worse. You got upended. Learn from it. Accept it. Heupel said, like, this needs to stick with you. Be like, man, we cannot let this happen again next year. We gotta make sure this stuff gets cleaned up and that we take every week seriously and we make sure that we execute and just get more depth. Like, the secondary was out of body. I thought we were going to be go the walk-on route with Wesley Wright at corner at one point in this one. But, you just need more bodies. You need more experience. This was an experience game for them. And what I wrote was, like, this team was never winning the national title anyway. Like, you look at that secondary and this pass rush, it's not good enough. Like, they were never on the gauntlet with this group. So it's maybe even better that they didn't get embarrassed in the college football playoff, because I think Ohio State, Georgia, whoever would have beaten them up.
No, you can't say that. The actual, to have a playoff appearance, like, that's a tangible, like, accomplishment as a coach. Like, if Heupel has a playoff appearance, he's what, one of like seven coaches, active coaches with even a playoff appearance? It's not a very high number. Like, I'm not sure how many it is, but like, that completely changes the just where Tennessee is on the grand scheme of college football. If you're talked about being in the playoff for that entire month of December, just the anticipation of the Tennessee-Ohio State game or whatever it is, the rematch with Georgia, like, just all of that talk around the program, I think, is just recruiting in itself. I think that's why it's such a big loss, because it's like Tennessee is just essentially robbed of that just for the final month of this year, you know? It's like it's...
But it's easily sellable to recruits of, like, we're ahead of schedule. And you saw these offenses, and all those recruits were in the building for what they saw against Bama. Like, they beat Alabama this year. That still happened. They still went into Baton Rouge and beat the crap out of LSU, who will be in the SEC title game. Those wins all happened, and they happened in front of the recruits. They're not going anywhere. And it's also kind of like, hey, you can point to these kids and be like, you're our missing link. Like, you saw how close we were without you. You're that final piece to get us there. Like, you're it. Like, this is the final piece. And the Heupel offense and play caller stuff isn't going anywhere. Shane Beamer's a CEO coach. Like, that's scary if you're a South Carolina fan. Because, like, if Satterfield leaves or the right assistants aren't in there, then you're in trouble. Like,
hey, I think he showed why he was co-SEC coach of the year in 2021, sir.
I'm not going to be rude about, like, look, win with class, lose with class. I'm not going to bury South Carolina. I made a joke about, like, their history, but that's my one thing. It's not even just, like, being rude. It's just more of, like, the reality is this was not a breakthrough moment for South Carolina. I think even South Carolina fans would admit still an absurd amount of work to do. You have won the SEC East one time since you've been there.
I would kind of disagree, though. They're sitting at 7-4 right now.
7-5. They are going into Death Valley next week, where the team has not lost a home game in 40 games.
That's true, but Clemson has been far from perfect. Like,
are we doing
Tennessee's a much better team than Clemson. Wouldn't you agree? Like,
I'm favoring Tennessee
by two touchdowns on a neutral field versus Clemson. Like, I think Clemson has been much more flawed. That's my only point. Like, South Carolina, based on what they did in the previous 10 games, shouldn't have beaten Tennessee. Like, there was nothing that you could really point to tangibly to say, yeah, South Carolina's going to beat Tennessee. So
road games are a different animal,
now,
man.
Now, when we're looking at the Clemson, we can at least say, look, they just beat Tennessee. I mean, yeah, I'm not going to just count them out for potentially beating Clemson.
So we're saying South Carolina is winning back-to-back top 10 games, one on the road, one at home.
I'm saying two days ago, I would have said it was ridiculous. But now they've beaten Tennessee. Now it's a little different.
No.
They've at least beaten one of them. It's a lot more probable than it was a couple days ago. But I'm not going to most likely pick South Carolina to beat Clemson. But
it's possible. The state of the program,
we have to play the games, and they could go 8-4. But still, 7-5 with their schedule and kind of what people talked about coming into the year, like, 7-5 is a better year than last year. So,
oh my goodness,
8-5. If he could potentially win the Gator Bowl, the Tax Slayer Bowl, or the Outback Bowl, something like that for South Carolina. The Outback Bowl, they changed that one too, didn't they? But yeah, I don't know. It's obviously a huge win for South Carolina. But last thing I'll say. Are these uniform or these helmets, are they burned forever for Tennessee? They ever wear these again? Or
it's a good question. I don't
know.
They
lock them up like just bad juju. I will say, seeing them on the field, I didn't hate the idea of the concept. Seeing them on the field, I wasn't a fan. It's like, this just isn't Tennessee. It looked like Clemson, honestly.
It did look a lot like Clemson.
Like just seeing them play. So, yeah.
They might be tossed. I wouldn't be surprised if they're tossed.
Not a terrible alternate, but they got the smoky grays, even the black. I think this is one too many. So keep doing what you're doing, Tennessee. I respect it. Respect the alternate game.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. But look, Kentucky just locked up Mark Stoops for an extension. They're not going anywhere. You know the defense is always going to be there. We'll get into what they did against your Bulldogs this weekend, but Tennessee's not going anywhere. Florida's a wild card, and Georgia's obviously the juggernaut. I don't know. I don't see it. There's still a ceiling at South Carolina. The history is they're a 500 ball club all time. There's a ceiling, and they're not winning 10 games with Shane Beamer. They're not winning 11 games. It's not happening.
Bold.
It's not happening. They go to Tennessee and Georgia next year.
Hey, who knows? Who knows what could happen, man?
I will also go ahead and put this on record. Tennessee, we talk about jotting stuff down and like, oh, as the teams around the SEC are going to jot down Heupel running it up on Eli Drinkwitz. Josh Heupel jotted down the end of that South Carolina game, and South Carolina has to come back to Knoxville next year.
What's he jotting down?
You thought 66 was cute. We're going 70. Like we're going 70 on the Gamecocks next year.
I mean, they just went for 63, so they might go for 70 next year. I don't know.
We play them in September next year, Matt Green, which is another part of this. I don't know why
they got Rattler back next year. Who knows? He could take the next step. We'll see.
I might put up a mortgage payment for Tennessee beating South Carolina at home next year. But look, we'll get to that. We have a lot of time before.
I bet you probably would have done that this past week.
No, I wouldn't have. I predicted them losing before this season.
No, but you didn't really think they were going to lose this game.
We talked about it. I said, I'm like, I don't feel good about it. I said on the pod.
You picked them to cover. They're like 22
and a half.
I mean, I didn't
pick them to lose, but I didn't feel great about it. The whole week, I didn't feel great about it.
Oh, you picked them to win by 3 touchdowns.
I did, and they should have. They were a 3 touchdown favorite. They really should have. Tennessee should have, but South Carolina, again, I don't want to rain on their parade. Those fans deserve happiness. They won a big game. They blew them out. And
social media game was strong. The Rocky Top and Sandstorm jokes they were making, those were some quality content from the Gamecock official account. That's all I'll say.
All right.
But there were other games that happened this weekend.
Yes. So go Gamecocks. Great win for you guys. Enjoy it. Savor it. And we'll come back to me after the Clemson game on Saturday. Matt Green, where are we going next?
I feel like the biggest game after that was probably USC-UCLA. I felt like was that a Heisman performance Caleb Williams put on Saturday night? It kind of felt that way.
I mean, it was a statement game for him. DTR, three picks. He struggled, but he was great on the ground in this one. It was a good back and forth for the majority of this one. I don't know. It's hard to say with the Heisman. I don't even know who my favorite is. Like, this has just been such a weird year for the Heisman now that, I mean, I guess it was a Heisman-type game for him, but I really don't have a strong opinion on who the best player in the country has been this year. I think
who do you think, yeah, like, who's in that Heisman conversation right now? Like, I guess Hendon Hooker's out. Two losses. And now he's injured. He was obviously in that conversation, but
I don't know who they put in from Georgia. That's the complicated part. Like, someone from Georgia has to go to New York. I just don't know who they put.
No, Georgia's not gonna have anybody. Like, if Stetson honestly just had the touchdown numbers he had a year ago, like, I think he was like 29 touchdowns or something, like seven picks. If he had those touchdown to pick numbers compared to like what he's actually doing, like, I think he's like second in the SEC in yards this year. Like, might have more yards than CJ Stroud this year. So he's got the yards right now, but he doesn't have the touchdowns. Like, if Stetson had the touchdown numbers, he would be there. But I mean, you saw what they did against Kentucky. It wasn't exactly a Heisman performance from Stetson.
Well, the betting odd favorite right now is CJ Stroud -120. Caleb Williams is in second at +130. Blake Corum +40. So it's basically just between Stroud and Caleb Williams at this point, because there's a huge drop off after those two. So yeah, it's probably one of the two.
I think with Michigan, Ohio State, I think Blake Corum's got an opportunity to have like a Heisman type statement game. But I think honestly, like, I hate how it has to be kind of this formula for a Heisman, because like Chase Brown, what he did against Michigan, like, he's leading the country in rushing. Like, this guy, he's one of the best players in college football as far as I'm concerned. Obviously, Drake May was in that conversation maybe until this loss to Georgia Tech this past week. But like, there are more guys to have in that conversation. I also think a Max Duggan. I mean, this guy, he just makes TCU's offense go. This fits the formula, right? Like, 10-0 or 11-0, like a quarterback with the dual threat stats. Like, Max Duggan belongs in New York.
Well, we'll get into Max Duggan in that TCU game, because I think that was probably the game of the day. But we'll get into that one in a second. I will say, UCLA just cannot get over the hump, which is unfortunate, because it's been a great year for them. Big opportunity, the Rose Bowl, and they still just cannot get over that Southern Cal hump. I don't know. The three picks were bad for DTR. Jordan Addison was huge for USC through the air. I will say, USC should be bigger villains than Tennessee. Like, they should be the villains of college football, and I don't really understand why they're the likable ones. Like, Lincoln Riley admits this week that, like, yeah, I maybe shouldn't have done it the way I did in leaving Oklahoma. Made some mistakes in the way that ended. Paraphrasing, but very just open about, like, it did not end well, and taking some blame for that. And then just bringing in Jordan Addison from Pitt, where he was a Blitnikoff favorite, and just the way that happened was pretty shady. And bringing half the Oklahoma roster, it felt like, over to USC, and just creating this ultimate transfer portal team, and obviously with all this talent that was already in the building being in Southern California. I don't know. They feel like they should be humongous villains that everyone should be rooting against. Like, you don't want teams that can just flip their roster on a dime like this and run the gauntlet and maybe even win a title. You don't want it.
I think it's because, like, the college football media, and maybe just subconsciously the fans, do kind of want this geographical balance, and they want the best team in the Pac-12 to be a worthy adversary. You know, they want, like, the Oregons, and they want to see, you know, the best from your neighborhood versus the best from our neighborhood, kind of thing. You know, it creates better drama, creates better storylines than, like, oh yeah, there's three SEC teams in the top five. Which SEC team is the best? Like, we'll figure it out. Like, so I don't know. I think there's kind of this desire, especially obviously Tennessee's a big time. You'd probably classify them as a sleeping giant that's come back. But USC is one of those blue bloods that they're like Texas, that people just they just wanted them to be back all the time. You know, it's like they feel like the sport is better when USC is good. You know, there's that whole talk. Like, people say the same about Tennessee, but USC is just, they are a bigger national brand. But yeah, you definitely make a valid point. Like, they've done way more villain type things, just raiding other teams' rosters to take them out to California. But I don't know. It is what it is. I feel like their chances of running the table, I think, just they got a lot higher after this win, because I felt like this was the biggest obstacle left on their path. Like, obviously,
do you think it's a bigger obstacle than Notre Dame?
Yeah, I definitely thought this was going to be a tougher game than the Notre Dame one. I respect UCLA much more than I do Notre Dame. Like, I think they have an identity offensively. Like, obviously, this defense has gotten torched like 5-6 weeks in a row now. But I don't know. I'm not impressed with Notre Dame. Like, I think 20 points can beat Notre Dame next week. Like, I think this was going to take a shootout. And like, you saw the way, just with how balanced UCLA is. Like, Zach Charbonnet, I don't say this lightly. I get Nick Chubb vibes from Zach Charbonnet. He's a workhorse, man. But yeah, I mean, they were able to contain him, but he still had 95 yards on the ground.
20 DTR, carries though, right? Like,
DTR is just a super dynamic athlete. But I'm saying what UCLA has to offer compared to Notre Dame. I feel like this was going to be a bigger challenge. I wish we could get that 11-1 Oregon versus 11-1 USC in the Pac-12 championship. That would have been the sexiest matchup by far. But I just have a feeling. Like I said, I did say this was their biggest obstacle, but it still seems tough for a one loss to beat Oregon after potentially Notre Dame, like you're talking. It's not going to be easy for USC to still get in the playoff. And what happens at that point? I think, is that what we need to start talking? Like, if USC is a two-loss Pac-12 champion, who is the fourth team? And I feel just crazy. Like, we just totally, we may have potentially ruined the sport with this 12-team playoff thing. Like, I think we just totally overreacted to this era of Alabama and Clemson dominance. It was just unprecedented. We're like, you know, this is terrible. We can't just have the same two teams every year. But it's like, we're not going to. That was just a crazy, like, 5-6 year period. Like, I feel like we're struggling to find four legit teams based on the criteria that we, like, all like understand about college football, right? If like, if you're explaining this sport to a person from another country, it's like, what do you mean? You lose one game and maybe your season's over, depending on where you're located in the country. But if they lose one game, their season's maybe not over. But two games, their season is over. And it's like, there's no tournament. Like, it's a confusing sport, but why do we need to? We don't need to explain the sports to anybody else. We all understand that college football, you have to be almost perfect to win. And I felt like the four-team playoff, it just made it, you don't have to be completely perfect, right? It gives you a little wiggle room, a little room for error. And right now, like, we're looking at Georgia and Ohio State, and you have to include Michigan and TCU because they are undefeated right now. It feels like there's, you know, a little drop-off maybe after three or four. But after that, like, if we see TCU lose, they're a one-loss conference champion. I mean, do they still have a case of getting in the playoff? Like, I mean, does Clemson still have a shot? Like, I don't know.
I think both Michigan and Ohio State are now in. I think they're the biggest winners from this weekend.
Well, not unless USC and TCU run the table. You're just saying you don't think that's going to happen.
I think they're still going to stay in. I think Michigan and Ohio State have now, as long as Ohio State, whoever wins that game next week, I think the loser of that game and the winner, I think they're both in. And then I think you're looking at Georgia, Michigan, Ohio State, and then probably a battle to the end between TCU and USC.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I guess Michigan, if TCU and USC win out, they're in. Michigan's not in. But if either of those gets tripped up, I think you're right.
Michigan just take the they took the Tennessee spot, basically.
I think TCU, if they're a 12-1 Big 12 champion, I think you could still make a big argument for them to get in that last spot. But
well, speaking of TCU, let's talk about TCU.
Yeah,
they had a crazy game against Baylor, and I will say part of the appeal of Tennessee no longer being a team fighting for the playoff, I can not root against them now, or I can root Yes, I said that for the first time. I cannot root against them now because they're just fun. And I'm sitting there rooting for Baylor all afternoon. And look, thank you for not coaching Baylor Bears, because that was just that final drive of just doing nothing with it was brutal. And giving the ball back to TCU, and they immediately drive down the field. Max Duggan, some great plays, both with his feet, with his legs. And obviously getting them to run on the field the way they did and get that off was just ballsy by Sonny Dykes. And it was just, it was awesome. Like, TCU is the team of destiny, and they've just been college football's greatest story, I think, this year. And I want to see them in the playoff. I want to see this happen. They're kind of like the team I can now latch onto, being like, all right, I had to kind of root against you because I didn't, I wanted Tennessee in the CFP. But now it's like, man, they're a lot of fun. And it's just, they win this way week after week. I will say, I still think this comes to an end. I think at some point, if Baylor's quarterback, Blake Shapen, is even a half decent quarterback, TCU loses this game. I could not get over how bad Blake Shapen. I could not imagine being a Baylor fan. I've never, like, this is the first week this year that I've watched every single snap that Blake Shapen took. Awful. Strong Jarrett Garantano vibes. Just not good whatsoever. Every throw is a interception waiting, like interception and waiting, and it's rough. Not a Blake Shapen guy whatsoever here, but I don't know. I think this was huge for TCU. Crazy ending. We won't see stuff like that ever again. But man, fourth and what, two, and you have nothing to play for if you're Baylor. Nothing. Like, you're not going, like, just do it. Like, you've been running the ball well. Go for it. If you get a first down there, the game is over. And they didn't do it. They punted, obviously, and TCU gets the ball in good field position and immediately goes down and kicks the field goal. Like, fourth and two, what are you preserving? You've already got three losses. Like, what are you doing? Just go for that. I was stunned they didn't go for it.
But their own 26?
Yeah, TCU was going to go down the field anyway.
I mean, there's, what, a minute and a half left? I don't know. I think
you get the first down, the game is over. The game is over.
I mean, didn't we just talk about Dan Lanning last week? Like,
different. Dan Lanning was, he was in a position of strength. Here's the difference. Dan Lanning and the Oregon Ducks were playing for a college football playoff. The Baylor Bears are playing for the Duke Mayo Bowl. What are we talking about? Like, no, the stakes were completely different.
I think you're up too. You can't just put a team in field goal range. Like, you can't.
I would do it. I would have gone for it.
I feel like that's bold. But I, man, this was almost just potentially disastrous, honestly. Like, with how this, they were in the perfect fire drill here at the end. But I feel like on second and seven or whatever it was, second down, there's like 25 seconds. Like, they had plenty of time to just run a play on second down. And then, when, you know, whatever happens, come spike it on third and set up the field goal. But to spike it on second, I'm just sitting here like, okay, so what are they going to do? Like, they're going to just – are they just going to throw it out of the back of the end zone? Or I had no idea what they were going to try to do, because, like, you run the ball, the clock is running, you're just going to run the field goal, team all? And that's exactly what they did, and it was – I don't know. It was beautiful. Like, it was just – There wasn't, like, necessarily many marquee games this week, but man, we got an incredible Saturday. This honestly was probably the best game of all of them.
I would agree with that. Let's go to Michigan and Illinois next. Michigan takes care of business late. Another walk-off field goal in this one. Or basically, Illinois, who Tommy DeVito does a check down in the second to last pass, was just bonkers to me. When you've got basically no time and you got to go downfield, not throwing something up and just doing a check down over the middle was bonkers stuff. But look,
better than Anthony Richardson.
That's true. I mean, we'll touch on that one. But Michigan survives. They win, beat Illinois. Great effort from Illinois' defense all day long. My main takeaway, I mean, obviously you hope Blake Corum is okay. Edwards is already out, so they're banged up at the worst possible time, but we'll see if Blake Corum's a go. Scary situation there with his knee. JJ McCarthy's just not it. Like, I don't know what we're doing with JJ McCarthy here, but DJU gets a lot of hate, right? Like, DJU gets a lot of vitriol. Five-star kid, a savior, like, should it be the next guy right after Trevor Lawrence? I mean, I don't see it with JJ. Like, I'm not saying flip back to Cade, but he's no CJ Stroud. He's no Stetson. He's no Hendon. Huh?
JJ McCarthy's not getting Dr. Pepper commercials. That's why he doesn't get as much hate.
But 18, when he's off, man, bad JJ throws are bonkers. Like, they're bad, bad. Like, I don't know where they're going. 18 to 34, 208, 6.1 yards per attempt, 46.7 quarterback rating. Chase Brown had a huge day for Illinois on the ground, but hey, Michigan survives again. But I don't know. I'm just not a believer in that offense out and what JJ McCarthy might have to do for them to actually win a title. He's not a national title quarterback to me. What was your takeaway?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And you saw, like, this offense without Corum in the game in the second half, like, this team, like, this offense did just about nothing. Like, this felt like a pretty big missed opportunity for Illinois. As good of a game as they played, like, for Michigan star to go out and miss basically the entire second half, and, you know, Chase Brown, you'd be able to run the ball how you wanted. Like, this game kind of went the way Illinois wanted it to go, and for you still not to be able to pull it out, like, for 19 points to win this game. Like, if you told Brett Bielema 19 points is what it's going to take to win this game, he's taking that 10 times out of 10. But unfortunately, Illinois couldn't get it done, and it's set up. I wasn't sure where to go with this one, right? When you're a neutral-sided fan, you're just always like, upset city, let's go. Let's see chaos. I want to see some upsets. But because this Michigan-Ohio State, this 2-3 matchup is so big, like, part of me, like, didn't want it to be ruined. I want that big time matchup on Big Noon next week.
There you go. Next, West Virginia, your Mountaineers go down, fall to 4-7 against Kansas State. This was interesting because it was all through the air. Deuce Vaughn was kept in check by West Virginia's defense. They did this through the air, 19-27, 294, 10.9 yards per attempt for Will Howard in this one, 2 TDs, 1 pick. Hey, Kansas State showing they can win in different ways, and they are very much on their way to a collision course with TCU in the Big 12 title game, and Neil Brown is on a collision course for heading back to the Sun Belt. Matt Green, what do you make of this one?
Yeah, I think you said it. Will Howard, when he's in the game, this Kansas State offense just looks a little bit different. So, yeah, they're looking like – I think they still haven't clinched it, right? Or did they clinch it this week?
They still have to win next week to
clinch the Big 12 title appearance, I believe. So I think they're going to do it. They probably gave TCU – I mean, TCU's had a bunch of close ones, but they gave them one of their better games all season. So I think I'd be down to see round two.
There you go. Let's see. We should hit Kansas, Texas next. So Kansas gets absolutely destroyed by Texas in this one. A lot of huge running days in this one, I noticed, across college football. Chase Brown, Muhammad Ibrahim, who we'll get into. Bijan Robinson, probably the biggest of all. 25 carries, 243, 9.7 yards per attempt, 4 TDs, 31-0 at the half for Texas. I mean, an all-timer by Bijan. And we talk about Heisman's. Why is he not in the conversation? Why doesn't he have higher odds? I mean, Bijan is... he's special, man. Like, that was bonkers, and they absolutely upended the Jayhawks.
Yeah, it's just the whole narrative and everything, right? Like, he's definitely got that star quality. Like, he's got over 1,400 yards on the season. Like, and he's super productive receiving too. He's one of the best players in college football, without a doubt. But he's on a 7-4 team, and it's just not how we do things anymore. Like, Ricky Williams, I think they went like 6-6 his senior year in college, but everyone could see, yeah, like, this is the best player in college football. So, you know, we gave it to a receiver a couple years ago. You know, we got Jordan Davis getting some legit first play, some legit votes as a nose tackle. You know, we're making some progress here. Maybe we can get back to it being truly the best college football player in the country.
Maybe. Where we won't see that is in Minnesota and Iowa. Matt Green, Iowa wins 13-10, and there was a funny gif of, like, they can't just keep getting away with it from Breaking Bad with Jesse years ago, with Iowa football, who are now on track to win the Big Ten West. It's just down to them and Purdue. But I said a couple weeks ago, there Iowa is going to do this. You're all going to hate it. You're going to eat your vegetables, and Iowa's just going to find their way to still somehow win the Big Ten West. But great Sam Laporta game. Spencer Petras actually did some stuff downfield in this one, but backup quarterback in for Minnesota, no Tanner Morgan. He was just completely inept. Muhammad Ibrahim did as much as he could on the ground, but just not enough. This was rough. Watched a lot of this one in between the Ohio State Maryland game and the Georgia game. So followed these three pretty closely, and man, Iowa, their defense is still great, but goodness gracious, who wants this in the Big Ten title game? This Iowa team is in for it if that's ultimately what happens here.
Yeah, this is not what anybody wants. I feel like Purdue and Illinois feel like the two best teams in the West, but yep. Here we are. Iowa beat them, 24-3, I want to say, head-to-head against Purdue. So, yeah, we're going to see another, Ohio State versus a team that's they're clearly overmatched against in the Big Ten Championship. It's a yearly tradition.
We could
got to give the beat down to Iowa last year. So I don't know. I don't think it'll be much different if we see Michigan, Iowa this year in the Big Ten Championship. But yeah, Minnesota, you picked them, right?
I picked Iowa.
Big Ten West winner.
Oh, start before the year?
Minnesota?
I think so, yeah.
I think you pulled the trigger. I thought about doing it, but...
Who did you pick? You picked Purdue, didn't you?
Shoot, I may have picked Wisconsin. I'm not even sure.
Let's go with Wisconsin. That works better for me.
I'll have to go back and look. But yeah, I think Iowa's got it. Basically, they just have to beat Nebraska, which, I mean, who knows? Iowa, they could lose any game. They could win any game. So the Big Ten West is far from decided.
Georgia struggles to get through a Kentucky team on the road. This was a weird game throughout. Will Levis had some good throws I saw, but this was just rough. And I don't really understand it. Kenny McIntosh had a great game, but I will leave this game to you, Matt Green. It seemed like coming out, a lot of folks were like, I don't know why you're blaming on Stetson. The receivers just can't get separation, and there was just, I don't know where you want them to throw it. The defense obviously was extremely dominant for Georgia once again, but I don't know. The offense just kind of did not find the big plays and did not really have any of those in this one. It was just kind of a quiet win, but the game I'd never felt was in doubt, but it was just one of those, I don't know, kind of slogs that it's kind of frustrating some Georgia fans. So what did you see and what actually happened in Georgia, Kentucky?
Yeah, I would say the game was in doubt for about like 10 seconds, right? Like, so it was really in terms
before
of
the missed
staying
field goal.
Close. Basically. So I'll get to that. But before the, as far as it staying close in the first half, Georgia only had the ball three times in the entire first half. And the last one was like a 2-minute drill situation, maybe not even 2 minutes. And they got three field goals. So the last one, it was, you still drove down, but it's like, that was like considered like a quality drive to get a field goal before the half. But the first two drives, like they moved it fairly easily down the field, but then, you know, get into the red zone, get in that goal to go situation. And they really weren't able to do anything. And I saw Graham Coffey with a tweet about it, kind of talking about Georgia's struggles in the short yardage these last couple weeks. I think it's like nine whatever in three goal to go from the 3 yard line. They've had like nine plays like that in the last 2 weeks, and they haven't converted any of them. So I think over half the plays they've lost yardage. So kind of surprising with what kind of this Georgia's identity is of just being such a physical run first type of team. You've seen them pass a lot more this year, just clearly looking at Stetson's stats, but just you look at the running game, like for us to be this far in the season and Georgia's top backs have like, you know, 400 yards, 500 yards on the season. Like you haven't really seen, like, Kenny McIntosh feels like the kind of the alpha of this group, but you know, we've seen all of them fumble. So it's like, you know, there's not really a truly reliable guy. Milton's had some injuries. Deshaun Edwards is, you know, he's had his good moments. But, yeah, right now McIntosh at 568, Edwards at 547. Both of them have 7 touchdowns, both averaging 5 yards a carry. Like, it's solid, but it's not the typical, you know, kind of dominant two backs like Georgia usually has. Like, James Cook and Zamir White were even a kind of a step down from what they usually have. And I feel like this group seems a little worse than that. But yeah, in terms of this game staying close, I think Georgia's got to get touchdowns when they get in the red zone, which I think has been, like, they're number one in the country in terms of red zone scoring percentage. But in terms of getting actual touchdowns in the red zone, I think they still need to show a lot of improvement there. But yeah, I felt like, so they're up 16-0 in the fourth quarter, and they decide to go for it on fourth and goal from the one, which, you know, it's not the worst decision. Because, you know, go up 23-0 potentially in the game. I just personally felt like 16 is a potentially still 2 touchdowns and 2 two-point conversions. So 19 kind of gave you that more, that truly 3-score lead. So, but you're also, I mean, I literally was texting with my brother, like, I mean, is Kentucky really going to drive 99 yards on us? So, like, yeah, like, let's go for it. And then who knew? Sure enough, Will Levis, they put together a 99-yard scoring drive. So I would say
mostly
once
Barry
Kentucky
and Brown.
Yeah, exactly. And just some weird deep balls. Like, you just saw Georgia get beat with a lot of deep balls, and just where they didn't really seem to know where the ball was. So a lot of coverage issues, I thought, in this one. But obviously they still give up 6 points, so it couldn't have been that bad of a defensive performance. But yeah, once they scored that touchdown, it went 16-6 and they're going for 2, I think that's the one point in the game that Georgia fans are like, okay, if they convert this 2-point conversion, like, this is a game on our hands. But then they don't convert that, then it's still a 10-point game. They obviously had the other drive late where they missed the field goal, but I'm not really sure what happened there. One of the worst. Oh, I guess it was the bad snap on that one. So that's maybe not necessarily all on the kicker, but yeah, a weird game for sure for Georgia. I think this was so let me see. This one, and Kirby is 5-4 since 2017 when Georgia scores 20 points or less. You don't like to see your team score 20 points or less, but it is good to know that Georgia can win kind of a dirty game like this where the offense isn't necessarily moving like you want. But yeah, 16-6, not pretty, but you'll take it.
There you go. They'll be fine, and a win is a win. Matt Green, opposite in why am I blanking on where actual Arkansas is? Well, why am I blanking on where they actually play?
Fayetteville.
Oh my goodness, I could not place that for a second. They blow out Ole Miss in this one. There was a moment where they were chanting Auburn and Lane Kiffin. In this one, this was rough, man. If you're an Ole Miss fan, you're pretty nervous, I think, coming out of this one. But this was over at the half. Arkansas jumped out all over Arkansas. The offense was just completely bad. KJ Jefferson played a nearly perfect game. I think he was like 17-22, just did stuff to the air, on the ground, this, that, and the other. Raheem Sanders was a monster. He goes over 200 yards. Quinchon Judkins of Ole Miss also goes over 200 yards. Difference, though, Jackson Dart was meh. The defense imploded. And just a perfect, perfect game, and one that, man, Arkansas really, really needed with the kind of season from hell that they're having. That was a statement win of like, all right, we're fine. We're fine. And, you know, good win for Arkansas. What'd you make of it?
Absolutely, sir. Never doubt it for a second. Zeus's home dog of the week. Those Razorbacks, man. And it was exactly like, Ole Miss has been fraudulent, all right? I've been an Ole Miss hater all year. I'm staying on it. This is who they've been all year. Like, when they've played anyone with a pulse, they've pretty much exposed them. Like, they could have lost every game they've played against a team that's actually half decent. Like, honestly, like, you look at Kentucky game, look at the A&M game. A&M isn't even half decent, and they could have beaten Ole Miss. Obviously, Alabama and now Arkansas. They just got absolutely shredded. Like, Rocket Sanders, it was, I don't know, it felt like you're playing NCAA football on varsity difficulty. Like, it was just, it was ridiculous. Every single carry, he's just to the second level, like, immediately. Like, it was just so much space to run. And so you just, He averaged 9.7 yards a carry in this game. It was just an absolute clinic. Up 42-6 going into the fourth quarter in this one. Like, just a beatdown. A crazy game. Like, I was trying to find some stats on it. Ole Miss ended up having 700 total yards in this game. Like, they got destroyed. Had two 200-yard rushers and almost 700 yards of, and over 700 yards of offense. I found a game from 2018 where I want to say it was Holy Cross. No, it was Davidson. Davidson had like 780 yards rushing. I think it's like an NCAA record. These two teams combined for almost 800 yards, 798 yards rushing in this game. Like, it wasn't as much as that Davidson game. They had like 850 combined with the two teams, but I couldn't find a game where two teams rushed for this many yards. It was insane. Arkansas needed this win bad. I think Ole Miss still shows that they can't stop the run. But one thing I wanted to clarify with you about this game, sir. You said this was a blowout, correct?
Yes.
There's a lot of Tennessee fans that didn't think that the Georgia game was a blowout.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Did you think the Georgia game was a blowout? Because I'm looking at the score line. They won by two touchdowns here. But I just wanted some Tennessee fans to understand that the final score can sometimes lie about the domination that went down in the game.
Well, part of it was 21 points in the fourth quarter by Ole Miss. This game was 35-6 at the half?
Yeah, 35-6 at the half.
I think this was a little more egregious. I don't think this is the same. I would not say this is the same.
It was a dominant performance that ended up being like a two touchdown win in the end, though.
Like, we know it was still different. Like, Georgia Tennessee was even different than South Carolina Tennessee. Like, that was a true just blowout. I don't know.
The offensive points make it feel worse.
We'll also never know because of the rain. We don't know how Kirby would have approached the second half without the rain. Because there's two competing thoughts. Was he going to always sit on it and go for the 9-minute death march drive and just keep the ball out of Tennessee's hands and just keep the score low? Or, the weather's good, does he go for the jugular and keep scoring on Tennessee in the second half? I don't know.
We shall never know. But no, I didn't want to twist the knife in the wound or anything. But I just found that interesting because I saw a lot of the same headlines of, you know, being blowouts. But yeah.
I would say this was a blowout, man. Like, you look at the half and the half score just being dead. Like, Tennessee still had a chance to win in the second half if things go right. They got the ball back, start of the second half. Like, they needed a lot of help. Things went their way. But it was not over. This game was over at the half where it's like 35-6. Like, you're not coming back on the
road. It wasn't. Georgia, it's like it felt over because you're like, Tennessee can't move the ball on this team. But in terms of mathematically just being insurmountable, it wasn't the same type of blowout loss. No.
Next up, Oklahoma, which I thought was going to be much more of a blowout than it ended up being. They could jump out to a 28-0 first quarter lead. They don't score again after that, but look, they beat down Oklahoma State early. Spencer Sanders, though, threw the ball 67 times in this one, Mac. How was that possible? They cannot run the football whatsoever. Ty Warren being gone has really hurt them, but that is indefensible. I don't understand how that was the case, but man, Oklahoma State just can't close. And Norman, this is a gettable year for the Cowboys to beat the Sooners with the kind of trouble they're having. Big win for OU, though, and Brent Venables in his program kind of calming the nerves there a little bit. But goodness gracious, terrible loss for Oklahoma State. 67 yeah. passes is bonkers.
Spencer Sanders' is ninth career multi-interception game. This game was lost in the first quarter, like you said. So Oklahoma's first six drives, four touchdowns. Oklahoma State's first seven drives, four punts, three interceptions. That's not what you want. The last 12 drives of the game for Oklahoma, they had 10 punts, a pick, and a turnover on downs. They did nothing for the last three quarters, but it didn't really matter when you're up 28-0 after the end of the first.
Mm. Well, we can also look at this final one, Matt Green. We had Oregon surviving super late against Utah. Utah looked good in this one in the second half, really fighting. This game was, I mean, could have gotten out of hand for Oregon. It does not. Cam Rising, no TDs, three picks. Rough game for him. Dante Thornton had a great day for, deep for Oregon. Ducks couldn't run the ball at all. Utah's defense came to play. Knicks was kept mostly in check, but I came away from this one, I'm just like, if we get Oregon, USC in the title game, I'm picking Oregon. They just feel like the most complete team to me and can win them in just the biggest multitude of ways. I don't know. Oregon, they're probably kicking themselves even more after that blunder last week, especially with Tennessee going down and just the state of affairs and UCLA pushing USC to its limit and just being like, man, this Oregon, man, they're kicking themselves. I'm guessing because they just... They took care of business. They went in different ways. They're good.
Yeah, and the only thing, the only difference between Oregon and the perception of Oregon and Tennessee right now is just that Tennessee just lost later, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Oregon basically did the exact same. And Washington, I guess, is definitely a more respectable opponent at this point in the year, ranked like, what, 16th, 18th or so. But yeah, I mean, Oregon, they feel like the best team in the Pac-12 and feel like they kind of squandered an opportunity there for a potential playoff berth. But they still got Oregon State to finish it out. But yeah, I feel like this was a good performance. Like you said, Cam Rising, they made him struggle in this one. And Bo Nix just kind of makes this offense go. He didn't really you didn't see him carrying the ball as much in this one, but you know, this team's just able to win multiple ways. I feel like the defense has kind of come along. And so to be able to win a game 20-17, they've scored, what, 40 points in just about every other game this year. So, yeah, it was a big-time performance.
Whew.
I'm curious to see who's favored right now, USC, Oregon. I'd probably favor Oregon at this point.
I would too, but I don't think the betting public will do that. I think a lot of people are going to pick USC and just think USC has got this thing. I'm not there. I think Oregon's better, and that will hopefully play out on the field in the Pac-12 title game. Speaking of Pac-12, quickly, Stanford kicks a field goal when the game was over to end it with a 60. Did you see this?
I saw that.
I mean, that's a fireball offense for me. You pulled
46 and a half over under on that one.
Yeah, that was wild. Vanderbilt beats Florida in a crazy one, just huge win. They have not Florida has not lost in Nashville since 1988, so oof, I don't know where things are headed right now.
Did Franklin beat Florida one time?
If he did, it had to be at Florida.
It must have been. This was one of the storylines of the week. I feel like South Carolina, I've seen jokes that Florida fans are just thanking Tennessee for losing to South Carolina, so no one's talking about them losing to Vanderbilt. I feel like this really kind of changes the trajectory of Florida a little bit. Like, they were kind of, you know, quietly having like a really good year one of Napier. Like, you know, obviously losing to LSU at home isn't great, but LSU is a good team. Like, we lost to Georgia, lost at Tennessee, you know, Kentucky's not the best, but you know, it's year one and you know, it's understandable. Like, they've gotten multiple, like, solid wins to hang their hat on, like as far as year one goes, and to close this out, potentially finish 8-4, maybe 9-4 with a bowl game. Now you're this loss to Vanderbilt. Now you're looking at Florida State. Like, this is not an automatic win by any means. I imagine Florida State's favored in this one at FSU. I mean, now you're talking about 6-6. You lose the Music City Bowl or wherever they happen to go and go 6-7. Like, this, it doesn't feel like just an automatic, like, okay, year two, this thing's going on the right track. Losing to Vanderbilt, and I know Kirby Smart lost to Vanderbilt. Nick Saban lost to who? UL, Monroe, and half the teams in the SEC his first year. But the times feel a little different right now. Like, it feels like you need some of that tangible progress. Like Heupel, like we saw year one. Like, you know, Tennessee, what did they finish? Did they finish 7-6 or did they finish 6-7 last year?
7-6.
7-6, and it was like the Purdue game went how it went, right? That's like, this is this is basically a win for Tennessee in a bowl game. But like, you saw like this offense, like what the vision is. It's like, oh, this is going to be exciting. Like, we can get on board with this. Like, we're going to be a tough team. We're going to be a team that people don't want to play against. To lose to Vanderbilt like this, especially like after the big win over South Carolina, where you're like, wow, you know, maybe they're like a really solid team, like just to blow out South Carolina the way they did. It was looking more and more positive, but to drop this one to Vanderbilt, it just kind of changes everything. And it's not all disrespect to Vanderbilt. Like, if you lose to Vanderbilt, you're trash. But if you lose to Vanderbilt, you're kind of trash. Let's be honest.
Well, I'm going to reserve any comment on this until Sunday. Georgia Tech knocks off UNC on the road. Another bonkers ending. Like, that was just kind of out of nowhere. Kept UNC's offense in check throughout. Just wild that ended up happening. Maryland gave Ohio State a game up until the end of the fourth. Ohio State wins on another crazy just fumble into a touchdown situation to close out the Terps. But
Does it feel like that's Ohio State's done that more than any other team? Mm. Like, just through the years, just have that, like, fluke pick, scoop and score at the end of a game to win by two touchdowns? I don't know. I have no data to back that up. It's just a feeling.
I don't disagree. It's wild that it's happened to them a lot. But, hey, a win's a win. They take care of business. Any other game you wanted to hit on before we do our wrap up with the state of the pick'em going into the final week of the season?
No, I think you wrapped it up, but yeah, let me hit you with the standings here.
Craziest college football weekend of the season, I think, right?
I think it had to be, yeah, just with all the all the implication, and we didn't even really get that many crazy results. It was really the Tennessee-South Carolina really the one true crazy result. All the top four all seemed to escape, but they were all challenged for sure. But yeah, now on the season, so this past week we both went 8-3 overall. You are now 92-43 on the season. I'm 87-48, so you still got a 5-game lead here with 2 weeks left to play. I did gain a lead on you against the spread. I went 5-5-1 against the spread this week. You went 4-6-1. I'm now 67-63-5 on the season against the spread to your 65-65-5. But you're playing 500 ball, you know, so, you know, you're not losing any money.
For sure. Matt Green?
Last thing, Zeus is now 8-5, third straight win, home dog of the week. So Zeus is really picking up his stride. He's actually, to add to that, he's won, wait a minute, let's see, 6 of his last 7 home dogs of the week. So it was a rough start there to the year, but home dog of the week, giving you outright winners on the home dog of the week.
There you go. I like it. I like it. Final week of the regular season is here, Matt Green. I should probably announce too that, like, this week with traveling and everything else, and I've got final few weeks here of grad school, I am swamped right now, that this will be our only pod this week, this one and the preview show on Wednesday, and then that's it. I got too much on my plate this week, and I need a little bit of a break to kind of, you know, get through.
This isn't just because Tennessee lost now, is it?
No, I would have done this either way. No, this was in the works, like with the holiday and everything else. And with school, a lot of stuff wrapping up here as I graduate from an everything school. Shout out to the listener who left that review. You got to give an everything school reference at any given point in this podcast. So, no, we're all good. Rocky Top will survive. Basketball will compete for a Final Four. Baseball is a preseason favorite in the SEC once again. They'll probably go back to the College World Series. Lady Vols are great. Women's basketball as well. Cross country did really well down the stretch here with their team. But, you know, a couple weeks here, I'll have another ring to flash, wedding ring, and then my graduation ring for the greatest university in the world, Matt Green. I feel good. Vols fans, chin up. Things are good. Things are fine. Be classy in winning. Be classy in defeats. It is what it is. It makes it fun. If people care this much, that probably, and people are this upset and get this much enjoyment out of your team losing and getting embarrassed on a national stage, like you said, Matt, probably means that the team's pretty good and that they're a team to hate because you don't want any more success going their way. So it's okay.
Vanderbilt lost. Now that might change things a little bit, but let's not go down that road.
It's up there. We'll see. Joe Milton, the bazooka gun's ready. We're ready to see what it looks like in a full game action because we have not seen that in a very long time. So, you know, I don't know.
And this could be a blessing in disguise. Hudson Mason, his 1 year starting for Georgia. You know, Aaron Murray tore his ACL. Mason was able to get a couple starts in there the year before he took over. So, you know, that could help things moving forward.
There you go. I forgot all about that. I didn't remember he did that. There you go. For that guy down there, Indikila, Georgia Matt Green, for myself, up here in East Tennessee, the Winnerstown, Knoxville, Tennessee. That is all I've got, Matt Green. I will talk to you on Wednesday. Until then, talk soon.
Yes, sir.
This is Ben Ingram, radio voice of the Atlanta Braves, and I'm here to tell you that you've reached the end of today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. As a friend of the podcast, I'd like to say thank you for listening to today's episode and hope you return for the next one. To show your support for the program, tell a friend or coworker or even a family member about the program. And if you're an Apple Podcast listener, leave the show a rating and a review. It goes a long way. That'll do it for me. But don't forget to listen to myself and the rest of the team at 680 The Fan and the Braves Radio Network this season. Go Braves!
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.